our town.
Hello, neighbors, and welcome back to Nightmare Town. We are Betty Boom.
And I'm Mandemonium.
And this is take two, middlemen.
Because we can't always get things on the first try, you know. We want it quality.
We do, and it just was not happening yesterday. Like, we tried recording, and I was not in a good headspace. Like, my depression is really fucking bad right now. And I don't know why, because it was pretty outside. It rained today.
Yeah, but the rain's kind of a bummer. But, yeah, you know, that happens with mental illness.
Yay.
Sometimes our brains are just like, no, can't function today.
Yeah, and it was like a whole week of that, so I couldn't even do my notes. And then finally I got a cup of coffee, I put on Skyrim ambience, and I went to town.
Okay, so I'm not the only one that does video game ambiance music when I'm trying to, like, study or write things, then. That's good
to
know.
It's the only way I can do it. Yeah, no, it's, I mean, that's what it's literally designed to make you focus on things.
Yes.
So if you guys are ever having an issue where you can't focus on something, just pick a video game you like, preferably not Mario.
No, that one's too jaunty.
It's too high.
I like, I like Skyrim. I like Witcher 3. Ambiance. I like Life is Strange. I like Animal Crossing. And I could go on for hours because I have a whole playlist of video game ambiance music to study to. Got me through college.
Yeah, the only thing I don't like about it is where I use Spotify and where I'll use it whenever I'm trying to do notes or something like that. If I just go to a random playlist, like, you know how they have like your daily picks or daily playlists? It'll randomly be in there. I'm like, no! I don't want to listen to this right now. I want something type. I want musicals.
Yeah, I moved to, like, YouTube Music because I use YouTube regularly so much, so I just have all my, like, playlists on it. And it's pretty good most of the time. Nice. Not always, though. Sometimes the shuffle does get me like that, too.
So, but, yeah. And then in, other news, we were just talking about it, and it's pretty much been a year since Manda and I have recorded in person, thanks to tornadoes and COVID.
It's been a lot of ups and downs with audio quality and editing, and we thank you guys for standing by while we have worked through all that. But yeah.
Yep.
Someday soon.
We could just go and have a picnic.
Yes.
We could have a picnic, and then, you know, pretty soon, like, people are getting vaccines, they're starting to get rid of the mask mandates, I feel safer going out in public to places. I don't know if it's just a placebo effect or what, but it's happening. I know you've had a lot of issues with the anxiety of people.
Oh gosh, yes, but that's just always, anyways. I'm always anxious around groups of people, so a whole pandemic with my, like, germophobia has just been a great time, really.
See, I'm the opposite. I thrive in crowds of people. Ugh. Like, it energizes me. So I feel like if I just get around people, I'd be all better. I miss people.
I miss some people. I miss my friends.
I miss you.
Yes, I miss my friends and, like, being around them, or, you know, like, friends being able to, like, come to and inside my house and just chill, like, because we've had to be pretty extreme with it. So, like, just nobody comes in our house, which is kind of weird. I miss just, like, having friends over to, like, play board games with and stuff like that. So that'll be super fun one day.
One day. We're just going to keep holding on to that one day. It'll happen.
But now to move from depressing one days to a really potentially dark episode, we'll see. You're going first this week, so what are you talking about?
So, I am actually going to be covering some of my favorite stuff. I'm going to be covering history. I'm going to be covering true crime. And I'm going to be covering the mob.
Ooh, You have the trifecta there.
I do. So, who doesn't love a good mob story, right?
I know.
Alright, I'm gonna jump into my thing, now that I finally have it organized, because like I said, yesterday we tried this, and I was not organized, and it was a train wreck. I might go ahead and edit the debacle that was and put it on our Patreon if you guys want to go.
I thought you were doing alright, personally, but I could see, like, the struggle on your face as
we were recording. I hated it, but, yeah, I might. I don't know. It just depends on how much alcohol I have in the house.
And how deep you are into editing, if you're just like, yeah, I'm gonna post that.
It's fine. Yeah, no. You guys can listen to all of... Actually, I might not even edit it. I might just put them both together and just be like, here. That way you can hear how often Bella scratches herself while I'm trying to record. But, so the 18th Amendment to the United States Constitution started a whole lot of issues back in the 1920s. Do you want to guess what happened in the 1920s?
So I know we talked about this yesterday some.
Yeah.
But I've slept since then and worked since then and have not had dinner. So do you want to key me and the viewers in on what it was? Because I don't remember the 18th Amendment.
It's fine. I actually keep forgetting that it was like an amendment and it wasn't just like a bunch of Puritans being dicks. Were they even Puritans back then? I don't know. Go listen to The Dollop. They're hilarious. But Prohibition started on January 17th, 1920 and lasted until December 5th of 1933, making it illegal to make, sell, or transport alcohol. It did not make it illegal to drink it, though. Also, did you know that 1933 was the number I chose for when I played roller derby?
I did not know that.
So, for two reasons. One, Prohibition, and two, also, my roller derby name was Betty Boom. Surprise, that's not my real name. So around this time, like around Prohibition era time, Betty Boop was in theaters as like little short cartoons. And there was a bunch of people that didn't like that she had a garter belt that you could see because, you know, she was designed after a flapper.
Yeah.
And so they got rid of they got rid of her cartoons and people started boycotting going to the theater until they brought it back with her garter belt. So, just saying. I love me some Betty Boop. And Betty Boom. What up? That's me. But Prohibition also led to pretty much everyone in the country becoming criminals. Rum runners, moonshiners, speakeasies, and jazz were on the rise, and nowhere was this more prevalent than Chicago, Illinois. In 1920, there were two main mob gangs that were running the Windy City, the dominantly Irish-American North Side Gang and the Italian South Side. Before Prohibition, these gangs made their money by running gambling and prostitution rings, but once liquor was outlawed, they were suddenly given the opportunity to expand their business. Quotations on business.
Sketchy business.
Both gangs seemed to be practically untouchable, as neither shied away from lining the pockets of dirty cops and politicians, which allowed them to not only run their business, quotations, but to do so with little to no hindrance, because everyone was breaking the law at the time. Cops, politicians, average Joes, mobsters, they were all at the speakeasies drinking. So when there was a raid, it was usually the cops just putting on a show. The gangs would either already know that the raid was coming and would hide their booze, or the cops would come in, take a few casks of liquor, maybe arrest somebody, give them a slap on the wrist, and they were out of jail by the end of the night. An example of this happened in 1924 when the Chicago police assisted the Northside Gang in robbing the Sibley Distillery, which had been under federal guard since the beginning of Prohibition. The Northsiders were escorted by Police Lieutenant Michael Grady and four detective sergeants and looted the distillery in broad daylight, taking 1,750 barrels of bonded whiskey worth approximately $100,000. And although Grady and the other officers were later charged with the crime, the charges were quickly dismissed. So things between the North and South Gang had never been very friendly, as they were both vying for controlling power of Chicago. Now, the two gangs were not the only gangs in Chicago. They were just the two biggest ones. There were other factions, and that will come into play soon, so remember that. And there was often gang wars between the two, where one guy would take a shot at this guy, and then this other guy would take a shot at that guy out of revenge, and on and on and on and men. But there were times of peace between the two. Their leaders, Dean O'Bannon and Johnny Toro, had even went into business together during peace times, opening a gambling casino. This seemed to work for a while, until it didn't. Tension started to rise again when O'Bannon demanded that Bloody Angelo Gina of the West Side Gang pay his $30,000 gambling debt. And although Gina was not a part of the South Side Gang, he was an Italian-American loosely affiliated with them. Toro convinced Gina to pay his debt. Things then turned ugly again when O'Bannon set Toro up by offering to sell him the Sebin Brewery. While Toro was inspecting the property, O'Bannon arranged for police raid. They came in and arrested Toro, and after he was released from custody, he went back to his buddy Gina and his five brothers and put a hit out on O'Bannon. On December 10th, 1924, three unidentified men entered the Schofield flower shop and ordered flowers for a funeral. O'Bannon took the order, and then the man went to shake his hand. And while one man held his hand in a firm grasp, the other two open-fired and shot him dead. And this started a five-year war between the gangs.
That's like some really, like, clever, detailed, like, way to take somebody out.
It really
is. Like, just holding his hand, like, so he can't.
Well, one of the things that I had heard about O'Bannon is that he had guns on him all the time. Like, he had, like, two or three guns just on his person. And so, like, you know, whenever the guy went to shake his hand, that's his dominant hand, so he just held it so he couldn't grab a gun, and that is just,
That's, like, just
genius. It's terrifyingly genius.
Yeah. Yes.
But after O'Bannon's death, Jaime Wise assumed control over the Northside Gang and immediately struck back at the rival gang, attempting to take out their lieutenant, a man that would one day become the most notorious mobster the world has ever known, Al Scarface Capone. One day in 1925, Capone was inside a restaurant when someone opened fire on his limo that was parked out front, injuring his chauffeur but missed Capone completely. This ordeal upset Capone so much that he bought a bulletproof limo that was so heavy it could barely drive down the street.
Wow.
Yeah. 12 days after the attempt on Capone, Toro and his wife were getting out of their car to enter their apartment building when they were fired upon. Wise, George Bugs Moran, and another man of the Northsiders severely wounded Toro. Moran even ran up to Toro while he laid on the street, put a gun to his head, and fired. The gun misfired, though, and the three would-be assassins had to flee before the police arrived. Toro was taken to the hospital, where he miraculously survived, but he was done. He chose to take an early retirement, leaving Capone in charge. The Northsiders weren't done with their revenge, though. They methodically tracked down and murdered the members of the Gina's gang that had a hand in O'Bannon's death. Soon after O'Bannon's death, the Northsiders had formed a governing council, with Jaime Wise emerging as leader. Although the loss of O'Bannon was a shock to them, the gang was at the height of its power and the Gina family was gone. Toro had been scared out of the rackets and Capone was on the defensive. The Northsiders expanded their business and strength and plotted another attack on Capone. In the second Northside attack on Capone, a fleet of Northside cars with Moran in the lead car drove to Capone's hotel in Cicero. While Capone and his bodyguard were drinking downstairs, the Northsiders drove by the lobby and open fired with their Thompson submachine guns. Capone and his bodyguard were forced to take cover on the floor, and once the attack was over, Capone sent word to the Northsiders that he wanted a truce. A truce was made, which inevitably began to come apart. Sometime later, Capone struck back at the Northsiders by gunning down Jaime Wise and several associates. Drucey and Moran now assumed joint leadership of the Northside Gang. The two gangs traded killings and bombings for several more months until a peace conference was held. Moran and Capone both appeared at the meeting along with many other mob bosses. During the conference, Capone complained that they were making a shooting gallery of a great business. He also stated that Chicago should have been seen as a pie and each gang gets a slice of the pie. The two gangs agreed to make peace. This peace would last for a while, during which no killing occurred as a result of a gang war. And then Vincent Drucci was killed during this time with the result from a brawl with a policeman. Moran now became the sole boss of the Northside gang. However, conflict eventually started again. Moran would regularly hijack Capone's beer shipments, aggravating Capone. Capone retaliated by burning down Moran's dog track, and a few days later, Capone's own dog track went up in smoke. Moran was the prime suspect for this. So again, it's just, this guy does one thing, and this guy retaliates, and this, and this, and that.
Yeah,
and
they're just going back and forth.
Men. Open warfare started again between the two gangs. Moran ordered an execution of two Union leaders who were powerful allies and personal friends of Capone, and this act prompted Capone to order the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which is actually why I wanted to talk about this, because the reason why I wanted to cover this is I know I'm talking about some like head honchos instead of middlemen, but the guys that died in this massacre were all middlemen. So, that's how my brain did. On the morning of February 14th, yes?
Oh, I was just going to say, I kind of ended up doing that too. Like, my, I don't know. It takes me a minute to get to the middleman.
Exactly.
You got to set it up.
So, you got to tell a story.
Exactly.
But on the morning of February 14th, 1929, the Northside gang was supposed to have a meeting at 10 a.m. at their garage at 2122 North Clark Street in the Lincoln Park neighborhood of Chicago's North Side. But Moran was running late. He had been getting his hair cut, and the appointment had run long. As he and his lieutenant were walking towards the garage, they noticed a police car pull up, and not wanting to get stuck in the middle of a raid, the two men turned around and went to a nearby coffee shop, subsequently saving their lives. The seven men that had already arrived wouldn't be so lucky. The cops came in and ordered the mobsters to face the wall. Thinking that this was a normal raid and that it wasn't that big of a deal, the men complied. The cops then confiscated their weapons before going to the back door to let two more men into the building. They were wearing suits, hats, and trench coats. Before any of the Northsiders could move, the men opened fire with two Tommy guns. In the course of 10 seconds, nearly 100 bullets were fired with such force that some of the bullets went completely through the victims, ricocheted off the walls in front of them, and re-entered their bodies from the front.
Oh my god.
I know, right?
Were that many bullets necessary? Like, you probably killed them.
I mean, I guess. All four assassins then walked out the front door. The two that were dressed as cops were behind the plain-dressed men who had their hands up. That way it looked like they were making an arrest. They all then got into the car and drove away. After a while, the neighbors started to get curious, though, because they could hear a dog barking inside the garage, so someone went to check it out, and they found seven bodies and called the real cops. When the real police arrived, they were met with a grisly scene. Seven bullet-ridden bodies lay on the floor, two of them with their faces blown off, presumably all dead, that is, until one of them started moving. Frank Gusenberg had somehow survived being shot 14 times and was rushed to the hospital, where doctors did not have high hopes that he was going to make it much longer. Police questioned him, asking him who shot him, and Frank's reply was, "No one. Nobody shot me." He then took his last breath. Yeah, it's...
What?
It's kind of a badass
14 holes in him.
14 holes, and he said nobody shot him.
Just not gonna snitch.
Yeah, I guess. Them gang ties, you know?
Yeah.
The victims were Frank and Pete Gusenberg, two brothers that were enforcers for Moran. Albert Kaleski, Moran's second in command. Adam Heyer, the bookkeeper and business manager for the gang. Albert Weinschick, who managed several cleaning and dyeing operations for the gang. And it was also said that Albert looked a lot like Moran. Like, they had very similar builds and, like, they had similar clothes, which will come up in just a minute. Reinhard Schwimmer, who wasn't even in the gang, he was an optician who just liked hanging out with mobsters. And lastly, John May, who occasionally worked on the cars for the Northsiders. And it was said that John was probably there by chance to work on a car and hadn't even known that there was going to be a meeting that morning, as he had brought his German Shepherd highball to the garage to keep him company. At the time, there was no way of linking the killings back to Capone and the Southside Gang, as Capone wasn't even in town when it happened. He had made it a point to let everyone know that he was going to take his wife to his Florida mansion for Valentine's Day, but it was very clear that he had given the order for the hit. Later, it was discovered that some of Capone's men had rented a room in a house across the street from the garage and were keeping an eye on the comings and goings of the Northsiders. And that was one of the things that they said, that they, like, Moran was supposed to be there. And so, like, these guys were in this house across the street, and they see Wise go in, or Weinchak go in, who looks like Moran, so they, like, they made the call. But, so the case is still technically unsolved today.
Wow.
And that is the story of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. And it was so much better than what I did yesterday.
You did good. And thank I didn't you. Know a lot of that stuff. I've like heard of it, but I haven't ever like read into it. Like, well, so good. I learned new things. It was very interesting.
I'm glad. So my sources this week are a lot of Wikipedia, like three different times Wikipedia, history.com, and the podcast Sinisterhood, which is pretty ballin', and I have started listening to them. But yeah.
Nice.
So that is my story, and I'm sticking to it. But anyway, guys, I'm going to stick to it. I'm going to stick to it like a fly trap. But anyway, guys, we are going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. And we are back. Thank you so much for, you know, just hanging out with us while we took a quick break, because we needed to process things. That way it's easier for me to edit. Ideally, that's the area that we would put ads in, but we don't have any right now.
But maybe we'll get some again soon.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. But anyway, now it is Manda's turn, and unlike my debacle yesterday where she kind of knew what I was going to be covering, I don't know what she's covering. So, please tell me, friend.
Well, we're going to, at some point, talk about one of my favorite people, but first I have to give an honorary mention to this story from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, The Man in the Middle. Because when we got middlemen, that immediately popped in my head. If you look it up, like, online, you can find it. It's just, like, a one-minute story. And, like, it's pretty great. Full of the spooks. But that's not what we're talking about today. Okay. So, today, we are actually going to be talking about some mediums. Because they're basically the middleman between the realm of the dead and the realm of the living.
Oh, snap.
That's just where my brain went for this. It went to mobs and then it went to mediums. I don't know how I got there. I don't know where the in-between was, but
wait, you went mob first too?
Yeah, but I was like, but I want to do something else weird, but I don't know what, and somehow I landed on mediums. I don't know, but so
dude, I didn't even think about mediums. That's fantastic.
To set up my story, we're going to have a pseudo story about some ladies named the Fox Sisters.
Ooh.
Do you know who they are?
I do, but go on.
Okay, yeah. So in March of 1848, Margaret Fox, the wife of a farmer from New York, just like one day started hearing some weird knocking sounds around her house, particularly, I guess, when her two younger girls were kind of around. The knocking basically became so maddening to her that she called a neighbor to come over to listen. The neighbor was skeptical, but went into a small room with Margaret and her two younger girls, Maggie and Kate. The mom began by asking questions to the room that would be answered with a series of knocks, which later, as the story was like passed around, was referred to as rappings, a series of rappings. So by the end of the night, both the mom and the neighbor were convinced that Maggie and Kate were definitely mediums with the ability to communicate with the other side. Eventually, their older sister, Leah Fox Fish, heard of the girl's mysterious powers and decided to cash in on it. So she started booking sessions with people who wanted to communicate with the dead. It went so well that the girls began touring. Maggie eventually broke and explained to the people that her and her sister were frauds and that the original thumping was just made by tying an apple to a string that the sisters would drop just to bug their mom, apparently. And at the New York Academy of Music one day, with her sister Kate in the audience, Maggie demonstrated all of their tricks to a crowd, such as banging her barefoot against a stool, which made the ever-famous rapping sound. Eventually, she did, like, revoke her statements and was like, just kidding, I'm not lying, probably due to poverty, but no one would believe them after that. So, all of that basically leads up to my real subject. That after the fame of these girls, many copycats came about over the years, each one claiming that they were, you know, legit mediums and could communicate with the dead, such as the Davenport brothers, Eva Carey, I think I'm saying her last name wrong, but that one's a whole other interesting story. Maybe I'll talk on her one day. Ann Odelia, and more, which brings us to one of my favorite people, because I used to be so into magic and like such a, like, I was a Criss Angel stan in high school. I was all about like magicians and stuff. So Harry Houdini, big surprise, I have like a whole encyclopedic knowledge of him in my brain from high school. But so he's a famous illusionist and kind of a hell of a stunt man too. Like, he did a lot of like big stunts. I'm sure you people know, everybody knows who he is.
He was mostly a stuntman.
Yeah, he was more of a stuntman, like, if you think about an illusionist. It. Like, the majority of the things he did.
He was ripped.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was kind of his whole big thing, is that he was like, hey, punch me in the stomach.
Yeah.
So it's magic. Like, these abs are magic.
If you're wondering how he falls into this category of middlemen and mediums, Harry Houdini in particular, like, really couldn't stand these people. Like, hated them. He believed that they took advantage of grieving people looking to speak to loved ones. This went far beyond any card trick or smoke and mirrors in his book. These people were harmful. So he basically made it one of his life goals to speak out against these so-called mediums and show the world their fraud and deception. He wouldn't stop until he had defamed them all, basically. Like, he hated mediums. It came to one particular medium, Mina Crandon, also known as the Blonde Witch of Lime Street. She was a nice woman, but the ghost of her brother, Walter, was much less charming. The medium would conjure his spirit, who would then rap out messages, tip over tables, and yell at the participants. Yes.
Is this the lady with the ghost hand?
Yes, it is the lady with the ghost hand. Okay, go on. Actually.
yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
So many times, ectoplasm would ooze from her ears, nose, mouth, and dress. And supposedly, the ectoplasm even sometimes took the form of a hand and would ring bells or touch the participants, allegedly.
But tell them where that hand came from.
I don't actually know where the hand came from.
Oh, it specifically came from one orifice.
My research didn't say, but I feel like it's probably not a good orifice. It probably wasn't one of the ones on her face.
It was a vagina hand.
Vagina. That's great. Hand. Okay. I don't know why my research did not mention that. I feel like that's important information. That brings touching the participants with the ghost ectoplasm hand to a whole other level. Vomit break. So she was nothing short of convincing. It was hard to deny what she was capable of and what all the like participants that would watch her shows saw. But Harry Houdini refused to believe her. In 1923, he joined a panel of scientists formed by something called the Scientific American to find a real medium. They were offering prize money of $5,000, which is a lot for the time, for anyone that could prove without any deniability that they were a legitimate medium. In doing this, he was able to call out many frauds. So, back to the blonde witch. She was so convincing to the panel that they were ready to hand over the prize money to her. But Houdini wanted a closer look. Because he was like, nah, you're not giving her that money. So in 19...
Not that bitch.
Not that blonde bitch. So in 1924, he headed off to Boston to join her in a seance. When the seance began, Houdini sat next to Mina, their hands joined and feet and legs touching. Earlier in the morning, Houdini had worn a bandage around his knee all day, thus making it extremely sensitive to touch, it just in time for the seance, coincidentally enough. The heightened sensitivity helped him feel Marjorie move. By the way, she has like 10 different names. Marjorie, Mina, the blonde witch. but yeah, so the heightened...
I can't cast stones.
Yeah,
true. I have a lot of names.
True. But, so the heightened sensitivity to his knee from wearing that bandage all day helped him to feel Marjorie move as she used her feet to grab various props during the seance. After figuring out her scheme, Houdini was convinced of the fraud and wanted to go public. Despite his confidence, the rest of the panels remained uncertain, putting off the decision. By October, the Scientific American published an article explaining the panel was hopelessly divided. This angered both Houdini and Mia. They were both pretty mad about that. So mad, in fact, that Walter, Mia's spirit brother, screamed, "Houdini, you goddamn son of a bitch! Get the hell out of here and never come back. If you don't, I will."
Oh, snap.
Yeah, her deceased brother ghost guy is, like, angry. That didn't stop Houdini, though, and in November, this just takes the cake. He circulated a pamphlet called "Houdini Exposes the Tricks Used by the Boston Medium Marjorie." He then...
You know, direct, to the point.
Yeah.
Kind of a long title, but it's fine.
Yeah, but he gets straight to it. And on top of that, he also started putting on performances, just recreating all of her tricks to further expose her. Like, he was out to get this lady. He was so, like...
How did he recreate a vagina hand? He doesn't even have a vagina.
Yeah, I really am gonna have to go on a deep dive after this episode to, like, research more into this ectoplasm vagina hand, because, like, now I'm just really intrigued about that, because that was just something that, like, they just kind of barely touched on in the articles I read. Why isn't there more information on that for me?
I heard it in a podcast. I know I heard it recently, so I'll have to find that episode, like, whatever podcast. I listen to a lot of podcasts. Basically, if you follow us on Twitter, I started listening to your podcast, okay?
Yeah.
So, it's one of them. I will find it, and I will send it to you.
You should, because I would love to hear it, because, like, I'm so intrigued by that. So... Marjorie, at this point, humiliated and without the prize money, she decided to come out with a prediction in 1926. "Houdini will be gone by Halloween," Walter, her spirit, declared. And, well, as most know, Houdini actually did die that October 31st from peritonitis, which is leakage or a hole in the intestines, which was due to a ruptured appendix, which happened due to several repeated unexpected punches to his abdomen while he was reclining on a couch with a hurt ankle from a previous stunt, which I believe was the Chinese water torture stunt. I think something hurt his ankle then. But yeah, he had claimed his stomach could withstand a lot of blows, but he hadn't been able to, like, prepare beforehand because the individual that struck him just, like, was like, oh, really? And just started, like, punching him repeatedly while he was, like, reclined on a couch. Yeah. So he was in a pretty bad position and got, like, pretty hurt by it. His final words before he passed being, I'm tired of fighting. I do not want to fight anymore, after hoping he would recover from the injury. He wasn't saying it about that bitch, the blonde witch. But back to her and her prickly ghost brother, they may have gotten kind of the last laugh because, I guess, you know, some people started, some people were like, well, how can she be wrong? She proved her prediction was right about Houdini. Like, that's pretty crazy. But by 1941, like, her reputation still was just completely ruined because of Houdini. Like, he'd done too much damage with his pamphlets and his putting on shows, and it's just all the time just, no, she's a fraud. No, we don't like her. But she still never confessed to her trickery, like, even on her, like, she took this to her deathbed. Like, she would not admit that she was a fraud, even though Houdini straight up was like, nah, you're a fraud. I caught you, and this is how you did all of these things. Like,
nana nana, boo hoo.
So that's the story of how Houdini took down one of the crappiest middlemen in the spiritual ghostly realm. And it just cracks me up because it's just such a heated story of, like, just seething rage about something. And it just cracks me up because I didn't know that about Houdini. Like, I didn't know that he had such a particular distaste for mediums that he just, like, made it his life goal to just, like, defeat them all.
Did you know that by the end of his life, like, he would be on tour with his magic show, and if he heard that the association was, like, trying to give that money to a medium, he would stop his tour and go. He was like, no, fuck that, let's go. Tour's over. So sorry, so sad. I gotta go prove some shit.
See, that, like, that's the, like, one thing about Houdini I, like, somehow didn't really know about. Like, I knew quite a bit about him, mainly more about his stunts and his magic and more his history. I did not know about this, like, complete rage for mediums and just, like, how much he was against them. And, like, that's pretty rad. He's just like, yeah, I'm gonna take him down.
So, yeah, okay, if you guys follow us and you are that podcast that covered him recently, will you please message me so I don't have to go back through all the podcasts that I listen to, because it's a lot.
And I would like to know. A lot of podcasts. I really would like to listen to it.
But I will find it regardless because I like research.
Okay.
But no, that was fascinating. Yeah. Like, that's kind of fun, like, having a subject that we're both like, did you know this? Did you know that?
Yes.
It happens very often.
I know, it's not often we get those. It's either, oh, I've never heard of that, or, oh, I know everything about this. Like, also. But yeah. Anyway, that was just a fun little thing for me to read about. Like I said, Houdini is one of my, like, favorite, like, historic people. And I just...
You're a magic nerd.
Yes, I am a complete and total magic nerd. Like, have been my whole life, but, like, in high school it really peaked.
High school was my Buffy the Vampire Slayer years.
If you're my friends listening from high school, you're aware of the level of obsessed I was with all things magic, and you guys put up with it, and it was great, and I love y'all. And I too went through a Buffy phase, but it was in, like, middle school when I was probably way too young to be watching Buffy, but
I mean, I watched it in Buffy, or, like,
who doesn't love Buffy?
Words. I watched it in middle school, too, but it was, like, in high school, and I was like, I'm gonna have a leather jacket that I wear every day and a long blonde ponytail. And I convinced one of the guys that was in Woodshop to make me
a stake. Wooden stake.
Yeah, except it was a wooden serrated dagger that I probably could have gotten into a lot of trouble with. Had I not just, smuggled
probably.
It
home. I loved like Spike so much in that show that like there was one point that I had like really, really blonde, really short hair, and when it was wet, I would like comb it back in my house to look like Spike because I just loved him so very much.
I'm way more about Spuffy. I'm just saying, like, I feel like Buffy and Spike should have stayed together forever. Like, I love Angel, but I feel like Spike was a better match.
He was a better match.
And
They
I had,
had just great humors.
it was one of those, like, Angel loved Buffy because, like, he already had his soul when he met her. Spike made it a point to get a soul so he could continue to love her.
Right? I want someone
It's
to
like,
like,
whenever.
that's just crazy.
But anyway, I will defend this to my dying breath. If anybody wants to have a throwdown, Angel versus Spike, let's go.
Oh yeah,
I have talking points.
we can do a live for that. I'll jump in on this too. I've got plenty of talking points
Hells
about why
yeah.
Spike is the best and he should have been the one to get the spin-off show, but we know that wasn't possible.
Yeah, but it was also, I mean, the spinoff show was already started by the time that Buffy wrapped up, and they did bring Spike into Angel,
Yeah.
and I really enjoyed it. Like, I feel like those seasons, I don't know, I didn't get into Angel as much as I
I
did
didn't
Buffy, but I'm just
actually.
saying, like,
I didn't watch Angel just because I was angry that he had a spinoff because I liked Spike more, so I just never watched Angel. I should probably go back and watch it. It's probably decent.
I have the collector's edition DVD set if you want to, like, have a weekend.
Oh, my mom's got it all too. She has all it.
I love your family.
We have all of the Buffy and Angel.
Same. I have the collector's editions. I got them for Christmases, and I was like, I won't see you guys for a month. Goodbye.
But
All right.
anyway,
Well, it is your turn to pick from the Not Hat.
right, let me get my knot hat up going here.
Yeah, that was a weird little Buffy the Vampire Slayer corner,
Fangirl
and I'm
hour,
here for it.
10 minutes. Fangirl, 10 minutes. It's great. I'm here for it.
Yes. If you guys have your own story to tell or ideas for the Not Hat, go ahead and hit us up at nightmaretown18@gmail.com over on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can go over to our website, which is nightmaretownpodcast.com.
With an
We have an
M.
M now. There is a nifty little part over there where you can just go and tell us your stories and click a button saying that we can say it on the podcast, but even if you don't want us to say it on the podcast, that is perfectly okay. I just want to read your creepy shit.
Yeah, like I just like reading people's personal like stories because it's like way creepier
It really
than
is.
just ones
'Cause you know,
like
when
you
it
find
happens to a
online.
friend of a friend, it's like
Yeah.
also if you wanted to, you don't have to do these next couple of things, but it'd be super cool if you did. We have a Patreon. If you wanted to go over and do that number, we have three tiers. They are reasonably priced, I believe. But each tier, you get more and more stuff, as you know, that's. I mean, if you're paying more money, you should get more stuff. That's just
Yeah,
capitalism at its best.
that's how it works, you know.
Yeah. But no, just go on over to Patreon. You can find us at Nightmare Town Podcast, I believe. I'd have to look that up. I didn't do that beforehand. Also, whichever, like, podcasting thing that you're listening to us on right now, whether it's Spotify or iTunes or any of the other ones, there's a whole bunch of them. But if you could, you know, like, review, it just kind of helps people, other new people find us and grow the podcast. Yeah.
Share us on your social
Tell a
media with
friend.
your friends. Yeah, like just be like, hey, I love this podcast. You guys should listen to it because I think you would be also into it. And share it.
Yeah, tell your mom. Fine.
Right?
Maybe don't tell your mom, because like my mom doesn't listen to the podcast.
I
So
can't talk. My
maybe
mom's
don't
the
tell your mom.
exception.
Your mom is wonderful and I adore her. All right, friend, what is our next episode?
Our next episode is Sinister.
Ooh,
Something
very nice.
Sinister.
I'm looking forward to that research.
That will be fun
But
for
I
sure.
guess I guess we're gonna get off here now. I need to eat dinner.
Me too.
Amanda hasn't ate dinner.
So what are you having for dinner?
Go eat. I have no idea yet. I don't even know if I have anything, like, laid out.
I'm making...
I have soup.
Some sweet and sour chicken and rice, I believe.
Okay, so I'm going to Amanda's house.
I mean, it's frozen.
Just show up. Feed me!
It's not, like...
Feed me!
Good fresh. But, yeah. You can have my frozen food. I'll share it.
No, it's fine. There's at least, like... 7 fast food restaurants between my house and your house. All right, guys, but we're gonna go, so
until next time,
tell us a story.
Bye.